Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young.
I'm tired of hearing about tofurkies. I want to have something real if I'm going to eat something vegetarian instead of some weird plastic soy thing.
Daniel Orr shares some surprising holiday recipes, including a festive vegetarian centerpiece for your Thanksgiving meal. We talk with beekeeper Dorian Power on how to prepare beehives to survive the winter. And after a devastating year of dicamba drift, soybean farmers strategize for next season. That's all just ahead on Earth Eats. First, let's talk to Mark Chilla, see what food news he has for us. How's it going, Mark?
It's going good, Kate, and I've got a couple of stories for you today. First up, a dozen medical groups announced on Monday that new blood pressure guidelines would mean nearly half of all U.S. adults need to make changes in their diet and other habits to decrease risk of heart disease. The new threshold of high blood pressure is now 130 over 80, instead of a top level of 140 over 90. The author said that people close to the threshold who now fall into the new category can reduce risk of heart disease with better diet, weight loss, exercise, reducing consumption of alcohol and salt, and managing stress. The research, sponsored by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, found that heart risks are much lower in those who have levels around 120. The new U.S. guidelines were published in two journals, the Journal Hypertension and the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. We got more details on the guidelines over on our website. That's at eartheats.org. And large livestock farms may have to start reporting high levels of two types of emissions starting this week. But Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer says the Environmental Protection Agency wanted a last-minute delay of a federal rule it's been trying to modify for years.
The EPA wanted to exempt most farms, including concentrated animal feeding operations, from having to report emissions of certain air pollutants that are considered hazardous. Environmental groups led by Waterkeeper Alliance objected. They said ample evidence showed mismanaged manure could lead to toxic releases of ammonia or hydrogen sulfide. A federal appeals court agreed in April and said the rule would go into effect by November 15th. But the EPA this week requested more time to prepare affected farms. EPA spokesman Michael Abood says the agency is responding to calls from farmers and developing a reporting form. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
The appeals court has not yet ruled on the EPA's request to delay the rule. But if you want the latest update, check out harvestpublicmedia.org. This week's stories come to us from Chad Bouchard, Taylor Killow, and Harvest Public Media. You can check them out at eartheats.org.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
You got it, Kate.
For soybean farmers across the country, 2017 will be remembered as a destructive year due to the pesticide called dicamba, a weed killer that's been blamed for nearly 4 million acres of damaged soybeans. Harvest Public Media's Christopher Husted reports that farmers are already planning for the 2018 growing season with an eye to protecting their crops from whatever pesticides their neighbors spray.
In western Missouri, a farmer drives his combine, harvesting a field of soybeans. He's been averaging about 60 bushels an acre, but not in this field. Here, the plants are shorter. Here, he's a victim.
So far, that field average is running 45 bushels per acre.
And this was one that was hit by a little dicamba drift?
Yeah, that's correct. It was drifted on, too.
Saw the cup leaves and everything.
Right, yeah. Yeah, several people have been out to look at it, and it was covered pretty much from one side to the other.
He doesn't want to be identified because he's also a seed salesman and worried that talking about dicamba will have repercussions for his business and his relationship with chemical and seed companies like BASF and Monsanto. Right now, farmers are facing a dilemma. Should they plant regular seeds or switch to seeds that are genetically modified to withstand dicamba and protect themselves? Those are called Xtend seeds made by Monsanto.
If they're aware that someone close to them is going to spray dicamba, sometimes their choice to buy Xtend soybeans is just for that reason in itself, just so they can reduce the chances of getting any kind of injury as a result of it.
The Environmental Protection Agency approved dicamba in 2016. Since then, more than 2,700 official investigations have been launched into drift damage in about half the U.S., more than 350 in Missouri alone. Drift happens when chemicals move from their intended field onto a neighboring field or orchard with crops that haven't been genetically engineered to survive that pesticide. Weed scientists at universities across the country say the chemical wasn't properly vetted. Monsanto says the product is tremendously successful and user error is to blame for drift damage. In response to the crop damage, the EPA recently set stricter limitations on when and how farmers can spray dicamba.
I've been around forever, and I've never seen an issue like this where if there was a problem, it would be shut down immediately.
Lyndon Brush is a crop consultant in Missouri. Brush says many of the farmers he's been advising are waiting to see what extra restrictions state agriculture departments add.
They need to do something because they cannot continue to have the number of claims that they're having because of one product.
Arkansas and Missouri temporarily banned dicamba earlier this year. Arkansas is the state with the most damage and is looking at instituting a cutoff date for spraying dicamba for next year. Monsanto is challenging that restriction. Regardless of whatever new state rules are put in place next year, more farmers will be planting Xtend seeds, according to Kevin Bradley, a weed specialist at the University of Missouri.
I predict the acreage is going to go up no matter what happens. Some of it is going to go up just because there's people that have been injured 2 years in a row or 1 year and just say, I can't live through that again.
Even Monsanto expects to fill half of the U.S. soybean seed demand for 2018, which would be double what was planted this year. That means 40 million acres of dicamba-tolerant crops. And more dicamba-tolerant crops likely means more dicamba being sprayed. Even so, Bradley says we actually might see fewer soybean acres damaged by drift next year, but other crops, like apples, could be vulnerable.
The soybeans may start fading into the background because there's more and more people adopting the technology, and so there's not going to be as many cases. But that doesn't speak to the trees or the vegetables or any of the other things.
Those additional crops could be the key to how the EPA proceeds with dicamba after the 2018 growing season. Christopher Husted, Harvest Public Media.
There's more where that came from harvestpublicmedia.org. Over the years, I've noticed that Thanksgiving menu planners fall into one of two camps. There's the traditionalists, the ones who want to stick with the classics like turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes and gravy, cranberry sauce, sweet potatoes, rolls, pumpkin pie. And then there's the ones who want to mix it up, either by putting a new spin on an old dish or by going completely off the rails with, say, Persian jeweled rice with lamb, for instance. This next recipe falls in the category of new spin on an old classic. Follow along with Daniel Orr for a quick and surprising take on cranberry relish.
We are going to make Cousin Sal's favorite cranberry relish. This is the freshest, cleanest, most delicious cranberry salad, and you can eat it either frozen or you can eat it just at refrigerator temperature. I love to eat it frozen. You can actually even serve it as a dessert. And what you would do then is take an orange, cut the peel off, then cut it into little rondelles or rounds of oranges, put that in your bowl, and then put some of this frozen cranberry relish on top of it. And it's delicious. So we're gonna start out with one orange, and it's cut into eighths. We're gonna put four of those in the bowl of the food processor.
Is the orange frozen?
The orange is frozen. So I've cut the orange into eight pieces and then froze it overnight. And the cranberries are also frozen. I'm going to add half a bag of cranberries. And I'm going to add about a half a cup of sugar. Pinch of my sweet seasoned spices, which is kind of like a pumpkin pie spice on steroids. You could also use a Chinese five-spice powder. And then just a little pinch of salt. Okay, and we're going to grind that up. Take just a little bit because we got to let those oranges really get chopped up. And also the sugar will start to melt a little bit and kind of enrobe the ice crystals with the sugar. Okay, I'm going to take a look. I'm going to give it a little stir. Okay, and then I'm going to add the remaining oranges, cranberries. So that's allowed us to get a little start on the puree, and then we're going to add the rest of it. And then we're going to also add just another pinch of sweet seasons, another little pinch of salt, and I'm going to add some chopped fresh ginger to this batch, a couple teaspoons. All right, and then we're back to the processor. The smaller you cut the oranges, the easier it is going to be for your machine to chop them up. So it'll take about a minute, minute and a half to do this. All right, and you just want to wait till you can have some little chunks of orange, but you don't want to have giant chunks of orange in there. And then what you do, once this is all done, you can either put it in a jar in the refrigerator or put it back in your freezer, serve it frozen. And I think a little bit of frozen cranberry ice next to a nice heavy piece of warm, hot turkey is a great refreshing change of pace from the ordinary cranberry. But if you want to serve it at room temperature, you can do that too. Okay, stop it there. Let me grab a couple spoons. So here we go, we're just gonna dish it up. And that's our little version of cranberry relish.
Wow. Oh, I love that tart and the It was really cold. the orange rind is so nice, that extra little kind of sharp. I just love how everything in there is raw. There's nothing cooked, and that really changes the experience of the cranberry.
Yeah, people never would think of eating raw cranberries or orange peels for that matter.
Well, you've thought of it now, and you can make this one days ahead of time. Stick it in the freezer and pull it out just before you serve your meal. I highly recommend it frozen. For the shock value alone, it is truly memorable. You'll see the photos and recipe when you visit our website, eartheats.org. And for those traditionalists out there, we've got plenty of the classics there too. If you don't celebrate Thanksgiving at all, we've got recipes for you too. Check it out, eartheats.org. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. NeedMoreRoasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Daniel Orr is determined to get his beehives through the winter this year. He's called on experienced beekeeper Doreen Power for help. He introduced us for an Earth Eats conversation to hopefully assist all you other newbies out there winterizing your own hives.
So I'm really excited about this because I'm a new beekeeper as well. I have my first hive this year. This will be my first winter with them, and I'm very nervous that I'm not doing what I need to do.
First winter, but usually the spring is the scary part. So in the winter, what we're going to try and do is we're going to protect the bees. So they're going to protect them from the weather and from other bees. So in the fall, you may hear stories of robbing, and not just from bees, skunks have robbed my hives. What you want to do is you want to give them a smaller place to guard, also a smaller place for the wind and the cold air to get in. So you reduce the entrance. Minimum would be one bee to come and go at a time. That way they only need a few guard bees at the bottom and the rest can go back into the part of the hive. So once we reduce it, we're also going to make sure that we've left enough honey on. I work on medium 8-frame boxes. My box, one of my boxes has to weigh about 30 pounds. I need to have 30 to 50 pounds of honey just for the bees to get them through winter.
And this is just going to be your honey super, not the brood box.
A honey super is only a honey super if you're going to take the honey from them. So this is the same box size is can either be a hive box or a super. So in the winter, there are no supers. It's all just them. So in my formation of 8 frames to a medium box, I have to keep 3 boxes full. So once we've got, we make sure that they have enough honey. And if you have any doubts, you can always feed them in the fall. You can feed them syrup, but eventually you can't do that anymore because it gets too cold for them to drink. So what we do is we put sugar on top. And you can put sugar in the form of cooking up sugar and water to make a hard candy. And you lie it on top. You can make, you can just kind of add sugar to it and mold it. So it doesn't get quite as hard as a hard sugar candy. It's called a cake. And you can put that on top, or you can just put sugar on top. And that's called the mountain camp method. So with that, the easiest, the simplest way without adding anything is you put a newspaper on top of the actual hive, and you put, drop sugar on it, and you moisten it. And then you put on your inner cover than your outer cover. The cake method is just adding it and making a ball or a patty or a slab and putting it on top. The other candy is hard candy put on top.
So the idea here is that you can provide food for your bees over the winter in case they don't have enough honey stored up. A sugar water syrup would freeze in cold temperatures, so providing sugar in a solid form makes it accessible for them.
After that, you have to make sure that there's ventilation. So the bottom is reduced and you want to leave a chimney effect at the top. So typically through the inner cover, there's a slot, and then a piece of the inner cover would be chipped away so they can come and go under the lid.
Now, do you turn that slot up or have it face down?
Put it up away from the hive so that they would go through the slot and then out through the top. But they do need ventilation. They need they also need an exit in case there's a lot of snow on the ground. If they're always coming in the bottom, they'll be locked in. So you want an upper entrance to get rid of the moisture and to just exit. The sugar on top acts as two things. One, it feeds them, and it also absorbs the moisture because the hive likes to cluster at about between 90 and 96 degrees all winter. So when they get cold on the outside and it's warm on the inside, there's condensation. It can get moist. It rises up, and if there's nowhere for it to go, it drips back on them and can cause a lot of problems with sickness and basically them freezing.
So would that point towards a recommendation of just using the dry sugar on top so that it's more, so that it absorbs more of the moisture?
Yeah, and all three of those forms will absorb the moisture. And even if you don't use those forms, you can also put on what's called a bee quilt or a bee blanket. And basically that is putting cloth on the bottom of a box and filling it with wood chips, so that it protects from the weather, but it also helps wick away some of the moisture. So you can put dry chips or leaves or insulation batting, natural, all natural fibers.
So what about wrapping the hives with roofing cloth or anything like that? Do you not recommend that? Or
No, you absolutely. If you ask 10 beekeepers, you're going to get 10 different answers. I have had winters where I've left my bottom board completely open and put insulation on the top. I have wrapped them and I've left them unwrapped. What you want to do if you're going to wrap them is you still have to make sure that they're ventilated. You can't seal them up. They still need places to breathe. So some people will put a black, like a tar paper on them, and they have to make sure that they cut out the top and the bottom. And other people complain that that actually gets too hot on a hot day. And, you know, here in southern Indiana, we get 70 degrees in the middle of winter sometimes for a day or two. The bees may eat more if they're warmer, but they also won't necessarily starve. What can happen is you can have all the sugar and everything else that you need on top, and you can even have a whole box of honey for them to eat. But if it's too cold, they can't move the cluster up to get it. So you can open your hive in the spring, and if it was a long, hard winter, your ball is there, and they didn't make it to the food. So possibly wrapping them away from the wind and some of the extra chill. Maybe that gives them a bit more, but they also may eat more because they're going to be moving around a bit more.
Any other tips for winter?
When you close off the bottom of your hive with the reducer, a lot of people like to put a guard for mice. That's really simple. All you need is a piece of hardware cloth, quarter-inch hardware cloth. It looks like a big widescreen cloth, and just cover your entrance with it. The quarter-inch allows the workers, the drones, and the queen to come and go. So you're not locking anybody in the hive, but the mice can't get in and find a nice warm spot and really destroy your hive.
Well, that sounds like a really economical solution, too, because I know you can purchase a mouse guard, but that sounds like a lot easier and cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the simpler things. You can purchase them pre-made, or you can just put some screen over, but you have to make sure that everybody can come and go. Some of the screens, if they're a little bit smaller than that, everybody can come and go, but all the pollen is going to be locked on the outside. They're going to knock all the pollen off as they're trying to get through.
Fun fact, skunks eat bees. I find this hard to get my mind around. It sounds so painful. I also find it hard to grasp how they would get their paws into that tiny entrance to the hive. Doreen Power explains.
What happens with the skunks is that they will come up to the hive and they will scratch on the hive, and the guard bees will come out and they'll eat the guard bees. They'll scratch on the hive, they'll eat the guard bees again. So there's a few things. Some people put tacks on the outside of their hive so the skunks won't get close. Raising them off the ground, which they typically are anyway, means that the skunk has to stand up, so they're more vulnerable to the bees stinging. So that helps a lot with keeping the skunks away.
I asked Power if it's okay to open the hive now and then throughout the winter, you know, to check on them.
Even on a warm day, I wouldn't open the hive completely. I would use a warm day to check on the supply of food on the top only. I would never open them up. And on a cold day or even on a warm, windy day in the winter, you just want to disturb them as least as possible. And something that people forget, especially, you know, new beekeepers, is, you know, when I first started, I was in the hive every 2 days. I could not stop myself. But that can be really stressful on them.
So in the winter when it's cold, you will not see any activity? You won't see any bees coming and going, so you just have to trust that they're okay in there?
You have to trust that they're there. And I believe they don't fly under 50 degrees. So I don't even look anymore.
I will do my best to take the advice of beekeeper Doreen Power and refrain from peeking in on my bees this winter. Instead, I'll provide food, ventilation, protection from pests, and count on the bees to take care of themselves. They're pretty good at that.
You see, buzz, buzz, buzz goes the honeybee, but tweedly, tweedly, tweed goes the bird. But the sound of your little voice, darling, that's the sweetest sound I've ever heard. I say, buzz, buzz, buzz goes the honeybee, while tweedly, tweedly, tweed goes the bird. Buzz, buzz, buzz goes the honeybee.
If you're expecting vegetarians for Thanksgiving this year, make sure they feel welcome at the table by making something festive and worthy of celebration. Daniel Orr has just the thing.
Hey, all you earth eaters, how are you doing today? We're back in the kitchen, and today I'm going to make a cauliflower turkey. All right, I'm tired of hearing about tofurkeys. I want to have something real if I'm going to eat something vegetarian instead of some weird plastic soy thing. So I thought that a cauliflower turkey would be great because it is meaty, and when you roast it, it's got great flavor. So I've got the cauliflower here, and I'm going to cut off the leaves and the stem. But, you know, these things are not poisonous. A lot of people tend to throw away too much of their food. The center part of the cauliflower is delicious. I mean, it's almost like a kohlrabi. All right, so I've got that cauliflower, and I've taken the heart out of it. I'm going to now make a mixture to put inside. I've got some coarse mustard, extra virgin olive oil, and again, all of our recipes are always on the website, eartheats.org. So that's about 3 tablespoons of olive oil. We're going to put a half tablespoon of salt, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, a teaspoon of lemon zest. We've got a tablespoon of Melaleuca spices. You could also use curry. My Melaleuca spices is just my signature blend. It's a very mild curry. It does have some saffron in it, but you also could use just a traditional curry powder. A couple teaspoons of ground black pepper and 2 tablespoons of chopped parsley. Now, if you wanted to make this spicy, you could add some minced jalapenos or whatever your favorite chili is. Now, what I'm going to do is put this on a baking sheet, and I'm going to pour about half of this mixture down the middle. And what that's going to do, it's going to soak into the cauliflower. You want to let that sit there for about 2 to 3 minutes. And that's really going to seep down in and really perfume the cauliflower from the inside out. Okay, and then I'm going to, after 2 or 3 minutes, we're going to turn it over. I'm going to put the remaining mixture on top. Rub that in. Okay, and then you put this in a pie pan or in a cast iron pan in a 375 degree oven for about 45 minutes. I like to pour about 1/4 inch of water in the bottom too, so it doesn't burn on the bottom. And we're going to put that in the oven.
You know where to find that recipe? EarthEats.org.
All right, about 45 minutes later, you pull that out, you got a nice roasted cauliflower. I'm going to serve it on a bed of arugula, and I've got some of my Caribbean curry vinaigrette. So once this is out of the oven, let it sit for a couple minutes, and then you can cut it. And you can see you can actually even cut it into steaks, into nice slices. And, you know, it makes a really nice main course, vegetarian main course. A little fresh lemon juice at the end. And again, you can, flavor this however you want. You can throw some chilies in there. You could throw some cilantro. You could throw some cumin. Would also all be good. All right, there you go. Enjoy, all you vegetarians out there. Happy Thanksgiving.
Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Big thanks to the Earth Eats team, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, Farm Bloomington Restaurant, Harvest Public Media, and Indiana University Food Institute. Our executive producer is John Bailey. This is Kate Young. Thanks for listening to Earth Eats. See you next week.